Yeah, so I was asked to moderate the discussion session on the secondary spin. I should say I'm pretty new in this subject, to be honest. I mean, I just started the business roughly, I would say, more or less, of secondary spin 1 year ago, mostly in collaboration with people in Rome. So I'm hoping also to use this session on to learn more about the subject. But so I hope most of the talk will be done by the experts in the room. So I added, I'm not going to give any talk about the subject. I think we've seen pretty a lot of talks. So I just I thought about some points that could be discussed. So that are in this slide. Yeah, let me full screen. That are in this slide that are mostly points that, of course, we can discuss more than these. These are mostly points that personally myself, being someone that is entering this topic of secondary spin and trying to understand all the details of all the problems, etc., I could think about. I also asked some people to give me some suggestions for topics to discuss. But so I'm not gonna go, we can go through some of them, but before actually going to the point, I wanted to ask people if someone has specific questions about the talks that happened this afternoon. I don't know if there were some discussions that people wanted to have with the speaker. So if someone has, we can have it now so that we can then move to discuss some of these points. You can, well, either speak up or put your hand up if you want to ask some questions about the talks of this afternoon, of this morning, sorry. Well, afternoon in Europe. Yes, Justin.
Well, since your point number four is actually exactly what Donato.
Yes, I thought it would be that actually.
And I can try to be quick. About that. So using self-force to inform post-Newtonian, post-Minkowskian, that goes under this tutti-frutti name sometimes. And yes, indeed, there are quantities related to the secondary spin that need to be computed from self-force that are very close, just need to be generalized in slight ways from work that has already been done and could lead to new post-Newtonian, post-Minkowskian, well, let me say post-Newtonian results for arbitrary mass ratios. And yeah, if I can share for a moment, I can.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, I cannot share.
Oh, wait. Someone has to make you host. Let me wait.
I'll make the request now quickly.
Okay.
It might take a few minutes, so I don't know if you want to.
Okay, actually, I can make it very short. And there's actually been a discussion.
Oh, your co-host.
Okay. So, do we see this? I mentioned somewhere here. I won't dig it out of the table, but and there's already been some discussion of this on the Slack, but just as two quite interesting examples, the spin precession invariant in the Schwarzschild spacetime with linear and spin contributions, linear and the secondary spin contributions, even just in Schwarzschild and even just for circular orbits, Mohammed told us that that's the last missing ingredient to complete the 5pn spin squared aligned spin results for arbitrary spins. And again, this there are calculations already. Well, also Josh told us that he's very much working in that direction. And so that could be easily done. And then I'll just quickly mention another example. So roughly speaking, you know, the more general self-force result you can get, the more you'll be able to do. But here again are just two examples of something that previous work is already very close to the redshift and spin precession in Kerr, but staying just an equatorial Kerr with high powers of spin on the big guy, but you don't need any of the spin on the little guy. But the generalization over what's there already is to have eccentricity with high powers of spin, or you know, there are also works which do actually all powers in spin at a given order in the post-Newtonian expansion. If we could add eccentricity to those, we could really also pin down these post-Newtonian levels. I'm scrolling over right here. Okay, so let me leave.
So does it need to be arbitrary eccentricity or just small eccentricity?
So the more the better. Okay, at least E squared. And I'm gonna be honest, and it's been a long time since I looked at this back with Neil Siemensen in late 2019, but at least E squared would be needed. But you know,
is there even a linear E term for the spin precession?
No, no. So there are only even powers in the eccentricity for all of these conservative quantities.
Yeah, so it's only the leading order in eccentricity, probably.
I think that might do it. I can't say for sure, but surely if you go into the next to leading order in eccentricity, that would definitely be enough.
Yes, Sarp, we should be getting back to this calculation, but this can be done numerically at high precision.
Yeah, with your code and with what I had written down, I basically gave all the formula for these in terms of space-time components of the metric perturbation and its partials. And all we have to do is basically put it in a grid in two-dimensional parameter space of eccentric equatorial orbits and then crank out your code. And yeah, we would numerically obtain, as we had with the eccentric precession invariant for Schwarzschild, but there we could make a direct comparison with post-Newtonian results that with help of Alex, Sam, and I obtained. But here, I guess we don't have that option unless some post-Newtonian experts want to take up the challenge.
So Chris Kavanagh is asking in the chat, is reading off the high powers of spin difficult there? Perhaps I don't know if Chris can speak.
Yeah, hopefully it's not too noisy here. Yeah, I thought Justin was asking for high powers of the Kerr spin. Is that all right, Justin?
Yeah, well, like, you know, you did it for circular orbits. So equatorial Kerr, redshift and precession, you did circular orbits where you made no spin expansion.
Sure.
Yeah. So just add eccentricity to that.
That's a project on the to-do list.
Yes.
But I was also wondering just about SARP and Martin's avenue of attack of that. I was just wondering if you have eccentricity and spin, is reading off those terms difficult for numerics?
I've never tried, but at least as long as we're saying closer circular orbits, the calculation should be relatively fast. So,
yeah. I mean, I think you did. Did you do that for the redshift?
I think at some point I started, but then I realized that you guys would be faster with the analytical results anyway and never went over. I remember doing it ridiculously high accuracy was problematic. I could only get about 50 digits, which was not going to beat the 10 or so PN orders that you guys already had, were pretty much already on the table at that point. But for the current purposes, that should be more than enough.
Yeah. I mean, we did the, you know, eccentric Schwarzschild work. We did that at machine precision with the C code. So this is more than enough.
Yeah, okay. So, does anyone want to say anything more about this? So if not, I think I'll go through some of these points because how far we go. But I will be especially interested in discussing three points that I was thinking about these days. So especially related to these first points, so our ability to measure the secondary spin with Emery's. And I think Paolo in the Paolo Pani's discussion on Tuesday that we already touched a bit on this, but there will be a talk tomorrow specifically on this, and it's based on the work that we did recently where using official metric analysis and a waveform where we included a adiabatic waveform but with corrections, with the leading order corrections into the spin and assuming circular equatorial aligned spin, so the simplest possible case. And what we found, and had been already found in previous works 10 years ago already with numerical clutch, is that the secondary spin, although it can contribute to other 10 radians or to the total phase, is essentially unmeasurable at least within this configuration and without including more generic orbits or other self-force corrections. Of course, this asks the question whether it's worth all the effort to try to include all the effects of the spin when you go to generic orbits and processing spins, etc. And specifically, I would like to understand the people's opinion on what if people think that the secondary spin might be measured, so it's worth the effort of building Emery waveforms with a generic spin direction, generic orbits. If people think that can, for example, break correlations, which are, it's one of the reasons why you think that the secondary spin in the simplest case of circular equatorial orbits, the spin wasn't measurable. If adding these corrections, for example, can break correlations and help to make the secondary spin measurable. I would like to see hear people's opinion on this. Georgios, so feel free to speak.
Yes. I think when you have this equatorial setup, even for eccentric orbits, basically the spin doesn't change too much. So I don't know if you have, I think in more generical setups, when the spin is changing orientation, you have precession, it will be more dynamically present. And it might include some things that we are missing right now, or I don't know, I must admit that I didn't study your work, I just went through it. So maybe some degeneracies due to the dynamical presence of the spin will be solved, because in the case of equatorial orbits, you have just something that is there moving around, moving the particle, okay, participating in fluxes and contributing to that, but it doesn't change really. It doesn't have a dynamical.
Right, yeah. In general, I tend to believe I tend to think that, there's two ends up. I cannot see the name, sorry. Feel free to speak up.
Okay, this is Bernard Whiting here. So I would like to ask a question about the spin supplementary condition situation. So people have talked about different spin supplementary conditions that can be used, and we saw in the neutron star discussion this morning that the spin supplementary conditions play a part in determining the evolution of the spin of a compact object. So my question is, is there any hint from the evolution of rotating black holes? So basically evolving two Kerr black holes in numerical relativity, that one of the spin supplementary conditions is preferred over the other? Or is there, more specifically, is there a way of using numerical relativity results for two Kerr black holes to extract some kind of preferred spin supplementary condition from general relativity?
Yeah, does anyone has a comment on this point? I see that there's two, feel free to speak up. There's other raised hands. I don't know if they are related.
Yeah, in order to cover that, we have done a work with the Jena group, basically Sebastiano and also Alessandro Nagar and O'Harms, trying different spin supplementary condition for the circular orbits. And the result was okay. We have exaggerated the spin, so we can have prominent effects of the spin supplementary condition. But for the realistic values, at least for the circular orbits, I don't think it will play any role. Now it can be, for example, that if you go equatorial, this will change since it's, for example, it's also that some of them are have, I think this Wojciech could cover it better, have some extra degrees of freedom. For the Tulchev-Dixon is actually a 5 degrees of freedom system, but the other half in reality 6 degrees of freedom, if I remember the numbers correctly. If not, Wojciech, correct me. So, yeah, it can be that the circular equatorial orbits are very particular and we cannot see any divergence. But I think this is work to be done. And
I went on a different side of Bernard's question, which is,
yeah, go ahead, go ahead.
I mean, if we want to compare against numerical relativity, then we also have to know how well defined are the spin quantities that we get from numerical relativity, which are defined from something like apparent horizon integrals. And apparent horizons are also, you know, they are slicing dependent quantities. So they also have some level of ambiguity. There was a paper by Rob Owen that was saying, here's a particular horizon integral that you can do that has less ambiguity just because it's invariant to just, boost transformations of the slicing of the apparent horizon. But I think that it's the same type of, I got the impression that morally it's the same type of ambiguity as we have in, you know, the freedom of choosing a fiducial world line within a compact object. So I thought that there wasn't anything physical about the choice of spin supplementary condition.
Yeah, Leo, this will be true in flat space times, but in this was actually what we tried to tackle with Yuasson, to see at least the frequency parameter that we will expect to be in the affinity should be the same for all the observers, all the spin supplementary conditions. And it was not the case. And we have done something similar in 2018 with Kost and Semarak. And again, it was actually in one spin supplementary condition, which has several ways to write it, is Mathson-Pirani. And again, we had a problem. So, well,
okay, so maybe.
So it doesn't seem to be a gauge, or well, this is what, or you can read it two ways. Or the spin supplementary condition is not gauged in the curved spacetime, and it's only in the flat spacetime, or you can see it as breaking of the maximum Papeterre-Dixon approximation, or at least at the pole-dipole level.
Okay, I mean, I can't really comment about the latter one, but the other possibility, of course, is that not every choice of spin supplementary condition is actually a reasonable gauge choice, which is not specific to spin supplementary conditions. Just whenever there's a gauge freedom, not every gauge choice is a reasonable one.
I would absolutely agree with you on that point, Leo. It's I would basically say that the Turchiev-Dixon and the Newton-Wigner are the only two reasonable ones because they constrain all the degrees of freedom. So the center of mass degree of freedom is unambiguous in these. And, you know, the work of Justin, for instance, showed that they can be transformed into each other at the cost of, let's say, a quadrupole at second order in spin. And what to say about numerical relativity, the point is basically all of these supplementary conditions will choose these centroids within, let's say, the event horizon of the black hole. So they are equivalent in some sense. So the preference is hard to find. But I would expect, as Leo said, if you have definition of spin from the horizon integral, which is frame dependent and has three components and has a canonical commutation relation, then it will correspond to a Newton-Wigner choice. And the tetrad basically that defines Newton-Wigner will be the tetrad, let's say locally of the slicing. But if you are able to find, let's say boost covariant choices, this may correspond to Turchiev-Dixon, but I would be careful if you are not going somewhere else into the non-physical choices of gauge by, you know, boosting completely freely. So that's just my two cents.
There's several raised hands. I don't know.
I'll be super quick.
Go ahead.
Completely agree with everything Wojtek said. And going back to Bernard's question, I think even in curved spacetime, it should be the case that this issue of spin supplementary condition is just gauge. And any deviation from that you're seeing is probably because you're truncating at the pole-dipole order. And the higher order spin squared quadrupole terms would fix that. And also, as Wojtek mentioned, and then let me also, I'm sorry, about numerical relativity. It's too bad Aaron Zimmerman or Harald Pfeiffer aren't here, but I don't know if this is published, but I definitely remember them saying also like what Wojtek was just guessing, that the numerical relativity spins seem to correspond very closely to a center mass frame Newton-Wigner spin supplementary condition or the canonical spin supplementary condition. That's definitely something I've heard Aaron Zimmerman say. Okay, that's all.
Thanks. I have Chris as his hand up for a while, so I'll let him speak.
Sure, but if, Martin, you put down your hand. Okay, yeah, I'll ask my question then. It was just about this statement about the measurability of the secondary spin. Sorry, this might have been addressed earlier or something. And I think you're asking, can we just ignore it? And I was wondering if you ignore it, does it introduce biases into your measurability of other parameters? Or what did you conclude from that?
So at least for this case, our conclusion is that although I think I have some collaborators in the call, so they can correct me if I'm wrong. But we tried to look in terms of, well, based on the Fisher matrix analysis, that at least for this specific restricted case, it will not bias the results in principle based on the Fisher matrix analysis. So it might be wrong when you do a full Bayesian.
If you don't include it as a parameter you're measuring, you get the same answer.
Yes, exactly. So for example, we tried, for example, play a bit with the, if you play with the prior, so if you restrict the spin to be, for example, the spin of a black hole, or restrict it to be inside the black hole limits, we don't see any difference in the measurements of the errors of between the case where we include the secondary spin and when we don't include it, for example.
Okay, and I guess one other question. So when we did a paper a few years ago where we derived some flux balance laws, which I think are used to do these in spirals.
Yes.
And one thing we concluded was that you did need to evolve the spin tensor, or we couldn't find a way to get a kind of flux balance version for the spin tensor. Did you guys resolve that, or?
But if I'm correct, when you could restrict to a line spins, and if you restrict to circular orbits, in principle, that's not an issue.
Oh, okay, sorry, I thought there was eccentric orbits here as well. Okay.
Wojciech.
So my comment on the detectability and the consequences for the data analysis is that I think that unfortunately we won't know until we try, right?
Right. Yeah. Of course. Yeah.
But in the end, I just wanted to note that in the two timescale analysis, there is not so much degree of freedom that parametrizes your post one adiabatic orbits. And it is essentially just this spin-aligned component, this angular momentum-aligned component of spin at the beginning of your in-spiral, and that's it. You don't need the initial spin phase. All the rest kind of appears at the post-2 adiabatic order. So it is just one parameter. So I think it might be worth it, or I think it is worth it just to know, because it just falls into the bucket of adiabatic effects.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I was trying to be the devil's advocate here too. But yeah, I tend to agree, of course, but when there's always the issue, when you add more parameters, you might have more correlations that might even make things orbit. That's, of course, until we do the calculation, I guess we'll never know. George's not too.
I think also since we can move a little bit on, when you go off equatorial, you meet also resonances. So it is question the as we did the study in 2019, we saw that it was spin square, but this is the resonance level is of order one. So the resonances of a spinning particle goes by the spinning secondary will induce also some effects that are not just the projection, but because the integrability is broken, we will have prolonged resonances. So this is also an effect that maybe we should take into account.
Aditya?
I'm still a little confused about how, we've discussed BMS quite a lot here, but I remember reading a lot of papers by, I think it was Mutao Wang at Columbia and Xingtong Yao, who talk about how there's a super translation ambiguity in the angular momentum and how they recently fixed it, so on and so forth. So does that affect the measurements in any way? I mean, are we worried about super translation ambiguity when we define the spin of the black holes, either in numerical relativity or analytically? I mean, I'm just curious.
Anyone has an answer for that? I don't have.
Well, I mean, again, from numerical relativity, there's no reason to expect that it's an extreme that it's a very well-defined quantity, because it's a bulk integral along the apparent horizon usually. So I think it only makes sense, like you can justify how it should make sense by saying that when the black holes are sufficiently widely separated, then the apparent horizons should be exponentially close to an event horizon, and these event horizons are also getting, arbitrarily close to having helical killing vectors along them. So, these things can be kind of made well-defined when you go back to arbitrarily early times, but they don't really make sense deep in the in-spiral or during the merger. And from the BMS point of view, the only charge that you have is the total angular, the only angular momentum like charge is the total one. So I don't see how that can, There is also the center of mass charge and the linear momentum charge. So there is, in a sense, a way to split out the orbital angular momentum from the total angular momentum in BMS.
Right, because that seems to be the view in the mathematical literature as well, wherein they differentiate between the intrinsic angular momentum and the total angular momentum. And that there's a good amount of literature in which they say that there was super transitional ambiguity and they were able to fix it. So, and in the motivation of the paper, I mean, I link it in the abstract, which was released basically 3 months ago. They said that in numerical relativity, one sees the problems of super translation, and our definition seems to fix that once and for all, so on and so forth. So,
I mean, I don't think it's a problem. It's like, I mean, angular momentum is not an invariant, it is a covariant. So you just know how it does transform under BMS choices. As long as you're clear about what is the BMS choice that you're making, then everybody else who does the calculation should be able to find the same quantity that you found.
So I'll just drop in the link chat.
So, there's another point I would like to also kind of hear the opinion of people in the call, which is about this point on the how far in the master. So far, I mean, all these calculations, we are using this pole-dipole approximation, so neglecting higher multiple moments like the quadrupole in the small objects. I'm thinking about that also related to the so the talk on the second order cell four, especially the comparisons that that Niels was showing that show super good agreement between the. So there was a case where you had the spinning secondary and shows super good agreement with the mass ratio six. If I wasn't and in our simulation, it mass ratio six. And naively, I would have thought that when you go to mass ratio six, like the quadruple moment, for example, the secondary becomes important. So you have the spin induced quadruple moment. But from that comparison, it seems that the so these pole dipole approximations is enough, is already quite good for to explain the results. So, if people have any opinion on this, I see that Wojtek, go ahead.
I'm just gonna say the obvious things that many people here know, and that is that the quadrupole belongs to the post two adiabatic order by scaling for compact objects. So it falls into the same bucket as third order self force flux, and if you do not include a second order conservative self force and third order flux, then you know including the quadrupole for compact objects is as good as nothing. So you know you're not improving the accuracy, even though this is easy, you know, low-hanging fruit to basically include some kind of quadrupole. But the second thing to say, and I think I'm going to take the argument of Justin there, as you go to higher multiple expansions for compact objects which aren't black holes, you have large dimensionless factors in front of these terms in the expansion. So I think it's a little bit of an open question. So once you have even a little bit like larger neutron stars, maybe the quadrupole term should become relevant.
Justin?
Yes, I certainly agree again with Wojtek that if you're thinking about non-black holes like neutron star, the quadrupole can be much more important than it is for a black hole. But I would also say addressing at least a couple of the last points, you know, and also more of what Wojtek was saying. Yes, these, even for black holes, even if the little guy is a black hole, there's a certain ranking of importance of these spin and higher multipole effects compared to higher order self force effects. And concerning what's relevant for LISA, actually for extreme mass ratio in spirals, they are perhaps not so measurable and perhaps not so important. Nonetheless, I would argue they are very important even within self-force for these efforts of like pushing self-force results towards comparable masses, as we've heard from many different perspectives like from Anthony Ramos Boade's talk, work with Martin and Harold, showing that, you know, we actually can, if we just directly use self-force results, push towards intermediate and even towards comparable mass ratios. And apart from that, all this stuff about using using self-force results to inform post-Minkowski and post-Newtonian related approaches to the comparable mass two-body problem, self-force results with spin and higher multiples on the secondary are extremely important. And those effects are much more important for comparable mass binaries. Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks.
Any other comments? Sure. So apart from that, can I ask, I'm asking the questions here and letting people say, but in terms of, if you want to, at the moment we are restricting everything to most of the talks, and you see in the literature most of the computations are done in equatorial plane aligned spins, for example in the computational gauge invariance, etc. It seems to me, of course, that going to generic orbit and spin orientations, it's a challenge, just a technical challenge. But I would also wanted to understand if there's any foundational issue that still needs to be understood to really go to a generic orbits when you add the secondary spin. Georgios?
Yeah, I think it's... one should, I would say, what I think should be done. I think we should follow what Wojciech has shown in his recent paper and try, okay, these quantities, this projection, the spin parallel, and the, let's call it Carter constant-like quantity, are not exactly preserved, but they are preserved enough well, so we could probably average them. I don't know. I think this is the way. Otherwise, we have 2 degrees of freedom, which with the frequency domain, Tarkovsky solvers, I don't know if we can address them. Mm-hmm. There might be some ideas, but I think.
Martin, do you want to?
Yeah, so I don't think there's any foundational objections here. For example, we probably could calculate something like the spin precession invariant for generic orbits. The thing that we still haven't done for eccentric equatorial orbits in Kerr. It's going to be a bit more messy because you're going to have to deal with the fact that you can no longer go to the simple case that the spin is parallel. Almost parallel. Actually, for the spin precession invariant, that doesn't matter. But calculating something like the correction to the energy flux, you would have to include the fact that this thing is precessing mm-hmm. at the same time. But then again, that only adds another integral to your source term. It's just another integral. It's going to be slow, but it's not impossible, I think.
Victor?
As Georgios said, if the quantities that are approximately constant will be used to parameterize the orbits, there is problem with the dissipation of these constants. For example, I think nobody have calculated the evolution of the Carter-like constant for spinning particles for adiabatic in spirals, nobody have found out if it can be calculated from the fluxes.
Yeah.
So I really doubt if it can be calculated from the fluxes. I think the good issue would need to calculate the full self-torque on generic orbits. Again, I don't think there's any foundational issues with doing that other than complexity. But
I mean, you can use a Meno formula as well.
Would it work?
Yeah, I mean, the symmetries are the same. It's just you are making an average there. But I mean, I haven't written it out ever, but you know, you can use the same you know, symmetries and same things.
I guess it's worth trying to go through that calculation and see if all the nasty bits drop out just as that happened in that case.
So, Victor, I don't know if your hand was raised from before, if you thank you. So I don't know if we have time for it to go, so we have 1 minute. But I had another, like a last topic that I thought could be interesting to try to dwell with, mainly related to if we do measure the secondary spin, for example, in the memory. Is there anything, I was thinking more in terms of astrophysics, any interesting astrophysics we could, I don't know if anyone thought about this stuff, but interesting astrophysics we could do with it. I'm sure there will be, but what are the thoughts of people on that? Go ahead, Martin. Yeah.
So, well, certainly if we can get something like the distribution of the secondary spins, that will tell us something about the formation origin of those black holes.
Right, yeah. Definitely, yeah.
For example, in LIGO, we see that most of the black holes that we see have relatively low spins, suggesting that there's something in the formation scenarios of those black holes leads to that. Maybe it's something that's intrinsic to forming black holes that merge in a binary that merge in a relatively short time.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? But certainly seeing whether that same thing is true for the distribution of things going into an emery or not will tell us something.
I was thinking more, in terms of also knowing, understanding the environment and, in the center of galaxies, for example, around the supermassive black holes, if you could. Of course, I mean, we might not even measure the secondary spin in many events, but Wojtek, do you want to?
Yeah, I just, again, like a super naive comment of things that I think many people here know much better. But I would expect that the measurement of spin will be so bad that there is not a lot that you can learn from it.
Right.
So I would expect that, right? So I don't know if Lior wants to chime in or someone data analysis inclined, but I would expect like the primary parameters such as mass and spin that you measure with so many digits, just subtract the logarithm of the mass ratio from that. And that's the number of digits you will have on the secondary spin. So maybe one digit, maybe zero digits, as your analysis suggests. So I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. I was hoping there was some astrophysics or more astrophysics inclined people in the audience. So I don't know about the time. Is there? I don't know the organizers. Like.
Yeah. So I think it's about time. Nice discussions and